everyone. I guess since I'm the moderator, I'll just introduce myself. My name is Lene Levy-Storms, and I am a professor in the departments of social welfare and medicine geriatrics. And those departments are in the Luskin School of Public Affairs and the Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, respectively. The title of my presentation is Engaging in Public Health Policy Development, Building a Long-Term Care Workforce. And thus far, we've carried through the presentations the example of palliative care and hospice care, and I will touch upon that. But it's really an example of a type of care that caring for older adults requires us to consider the complexities of. In other words, gerontology and geriatrics is inherently interdisciplinary. It is not about training one type of professional to meet the care needs of older adults. And believe it or not, that is still getting into the mindset of our policy makers. And the other point I just want to make is that although, of course, I'm interested in older adults in my research, I've also become very interested in their caretakers. And most of us know that family caregivers have received an enormous amount of attention in research and somewhat in the policy arena. But there is a large workforce that is out there, and one subset of that workforce is direct care workers. And they are often overlooked. And so I encourage you to not think about older adults from a policy perspective as just a target audience, but it is everyone who helps them deal with their healthcare issues together. So that's what I'd like to touch upon today. Now, I definitely have no conflict of interest, but I just thought there were some things that were really obvious that, you know, getting promoted and my job depend on the study. But I really have no conflict of interest. So basically, I'm going to talk about two policy processes, and one of those relates to the problem, and one of those relates to the solution. Because after all, we have policy because policies are solutions to problems. And within the conceptualization of the problem, which politically can be incredibly difficult because how we look and define something often depends on where we're coming from and our own personal experiences. So the focus here is on the problem of the lack of workforce training in aging. And also that there's an inconsistent emphasis on this training in different professions and among paraprofessionals. So that's the problem. The solution requires not only identifying what might help solve or reduce the problem, but getting consensus on that. And my other colleagues here have touched upon that. Just to mention some of the alphabet soup of different policies that are out there addressing this problem in different ways, of course, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, BHCP, the Bureau of Healthcare Professions, HRSA, the Health Services Resource Health Research Services Administration, maybe I'm even tripping up on that, the Department of Labor, the Paraprofessional Health Institute, the Elder Care Workforce Alliance, the National Family Caregiver Support Program, hopefully you're following me, DWA, the Direct Workers Alliance, SWLI is the Social Work Leadership Institute, AGS, the American Geriatric Society, and others. You get the message. There's a lot of entities out there addressing this problem and also trying to put together a solution. Overall, there is an interdisciplinary competency movement. So we aren't really specifying how to train people, but we're trying to specify what the standard should be. And shortly I'll get into more details about what I mean by competencies. So now for part one, the conceptualization of the problem. So I just want to remind everyone that old age is still new. And that's a quote by Naomi Feil, who's a social worker. Really, it wasn't until the turn of the last century that we moved from acute infectious diseases to more chronic diseases. And that transition in terms of major causes of mortality, and that came about because of basic public health efforts, not fancy healthcare technology. And I'm speaking to the converted, but I do have fun with that in class. And basically, at the same time that this was happening, people started living longer. And so when you think about the problem of aging and health, at the turn of the century, that was an individual issue that we handled within the family. But over time, as more people were dealing with chronic health conditions and more people are living longer, it becomes a social problem. And that means that as a society, we have to look at it as a social problem and think about how to address that. And what is falling on society is our aging population and forcing us to look at those issues more than ever, but we still have a really long way to go because really we know most people don't like talking about getting old. Everybody wants to deny that. And finally, it becomes a public problem because we need a government response. The government response is the best way to provide a core of a solution to something that is affecting all of society. So when we talk about the healthcare workforce, we're talking about a lot of different people out there. And just in case we weren't sure, I wanted to remind everyone how incredibly diverse this workforce is. So we certainly have our public health workforce, and of course that can include government, state employees, all of the public health professionals with MPHs out there and doctorates and everything. We also have our healthcare professionals, and those providers are largely in hospitals and clinics, and maybe to a little bit in the community. Then there are these paraprofessionals, and that is what I touched upon earlier as the direct care workers being a very specific type, but there's a lot of other paraprofessionals. And then there are our family caregivers. And even though they were the main provider for aging and health care at the turn of the last century, there were far fewer of them. Now they are the largest part of the workforce, our family caregivers. And perhaps there's someone I've left out. But the point is that it's incredibly diverse. And if we look at the pie, in particularly, we really hear a lot, we're professionals, and we hear a lot about professional education in geriatrics and gerontology. So, you know, this is showing us that healthcare practitioners and technical occupations, you know, basically make up just over half, just under two-thirds of the pie. And then we have about 12% of that pie for allied health occupations, you know, occupational therapists, physical therapists, and so forth. And then our direct care workers at about 30%. And I just thought what was interesting to point out about this is that although this is the pie in terms of composition, if we start to look at how much time these workers put in to care for the older adult, the pie would be disproportionately reflecting direct care workers, the least educated, the least trained of the workforce. So basically, when we talk about providing care to older adults, we're not talking about a one-on-one sort of experience. We're talking about integrated care. And part of that integrated care is to get geriatric competencies into all educational settings. And I do believe this is becoming more connected, but for so long it was really discipline specific. Everybody was on this competency mission as if they really had unique aspects that they needed to address. But really it needs to be among all professionals. And in doing so, we can facilitate interdisciplinary collaboration among providers, patients, and caregivers. Note, it's not just collaboration among the providers, but the patients and the caregivers. It's all part of the system. And by doing that, then we can conceptualize the idea of having an integrated medical and long-term care service system. And people often get that confused. Medical care is more acute-oriented, and long-term care is certainly what it says in terms of being long-term, but the emphasis is more on managing daily functioning, whereas in the medical setting, it's more curative and looking at managing diseases. So we can't do one or the other. We need both. So in terms of the delivery of long-term care, I've already alluded to and touched upon how family caregivers are just overwhelmingly the primary providers for long-term care. And although we have the National Family Caregiver Support Program, I believe that came out in the 70s, but don't quote me. But essentially, it's a government response to provide support and to some extent training for family caregivers. But aside from that, and some agencies like the Alzheimer's Association, there's less of a national movement to really train caregivers because they're informal. The direct care workers are often grouped into three categories, and those include nursing aides, often certified nursing assistants, and they are technically certified by states in terms of the number of hours that they've received training and their knowledge and to some extent what their skills are. Then there are home health aides, and home health aides are a mix of both certified nursing aides and personal and home care aides. Basically, all of the certified direct care workers have some affiliation with either Medicaid or Medicare reimbursement, and that's why they're certified. The rest of the direct care workers, personal and home care aides, are not. Those are the people that you call your friend and you say, hey, you know, my mom needs some help. Where do I get someone to come into the home? How do I find them? And so forth. And they're not certified necessarily unless you come through. I mean, they're not necessarily certified. It's too expensive. And also, they might have been vetted if you get them through an agency. But largely, these are word-of-mouth referrals from communities, and that's how, you know, they come about. And then, of course, there's the whole scope of multidisciplinary professionals that are out there that are integral to the delivery of long-term care, many of whom also are not really clear on the complementary nature of long-term and acute care. So just because they're a high-level professional does not mean that they understand the unique needs of our aging population and the wide range of healthcare that spans from the high-tech care to the super-duper low-level daily routine of eating, dressing, and so forth. So a closer look. Basically, with multidisciplinary professionals, older Americans account for a disproportionate share of professional healthcare services. That's really not new. We all know that. However, the number of geriatric specialists remain low. I'm always shocked when I'm talking to friends about their parents and the issues that they're having and knowing that they're seeing a family medical doctor or a general internist, but really you have to be super duper old to get to see usually the geriatrician because there are so few of them. Also, there's state laws and regulations that have a mismatch between competence and legal scope of practice. So this reflects the longstanding evolutionary nature of our country and the way we regulate in society and that tension between federal government and states. We want to give states the freedom, and they want the freedom to not be, you know, centrally controlled, but as a consequence, things get varied as they... No, didn't want me. All right, I'll try to pick it up real fast. Paraprofessionals, basically they provide the majority of the direct care, and they provide some clinical services plus the other aspects of care that I mentioned. And basically, there is a lack of universal standards for training and competencies. So it's all over the map in terms of what they need to know and how much time they need to have to know it, because it varies by state what the minimum amount of training is. So I'm going to fly through this. This is just some components of care coordination, because we're not just talking about training the workforce in geriatric knowledge, but having them work together. And so these are all of the different components, but I want to jump to the definition that care coordination, and this is somewhat of idealistic, is a person-centered, assessment-based, interdisciplinary approach to integrating health care and social support services in a cost-effective manner in which an individual's needs and preferences are assessed, and a comprehensive care plan is developed, and services are managed and monitored by an evidence-based process, which typically involves a designated lead care coordinator. That truly is dreamy. So I don't want to go way over.
Just finish.
Okay. So a competency-based approach. Basically, it's a framework for what people need to strive to when they're training professionals about how to integrate geriatric knowledge into a curriculum. They're clear and measurable practice behaviors with evidence-based indicators to gauge performance. Now, that's always hopefully at the end, after they've gone through all the iterations, because they're incredibly difficult to make them clear and measurable. And they're organized often into domains that can be tailored to specialist or generalist educational aims. And finally, our amazing passage of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, in short, the ACA, in 2010, with its ample lead time for actually implementing it, attempts to direct, to address some of these workforce issues, including strengthening the direct care workforce, really for the first time acknowledging the important role that these workers have since the Nursing Home Reform Act of 1987, where any standards emerged for direct care. Also addressing clinician and faculty shortages, and also redesigning healthcare delivery. And that, of course, would get to the care coordination piece. So I just really am highlighting here what I would call intended provisions of the Affordable Care Act, because some of these have already been nixed. But I think it's important to kind of see what was conceptualized in the beginning and realize that it's the political environment and the economic environment that can affect whether or not these provisions actually become implemented. You can't do it without money. So in an overview sort of way, there is a provision for geriatrics, health professions, education, and training. And basically expanding the eligibility for geriatric academic careers beyond physicians. They're not the only healthcare provider in the world. There's a lot of other important professionals. Authorizing new geriatric career incentive awards program. Authorizing close to $11 million in supplemental grants to geriatric education centers. Community-based centers that provide the ongoing professional training to these different healthcare workers. Training opportunities for direct care workers. So $10 million over 3 years to establish advanced training opportunities. And this is to, when we say advanced training, you know, they have no career ladder. So where can they go from the direct care, and what advanced skills do they need? So this is so important. The next thing should have been bolded into the side, direct care worker demonstration for personal and home care aides. This provides $85 million per year in mandatory funding for 3 years to conduct a Medicaid demonstration in up to 6 states. And I personally have actually tried to contact these sites and find out information about their proposals and their curricula to see what are they inventing. No one's looking across these demonstration sites to see what's common, what's different, what might work best. And so, I'll persist, but I have a long way to go. Also, the National Healthcare Workforce Commission and Assessment. So basically a commission that's going to look at all of these, this whole workforce. Look at how many do we have? Do you know how incredibly inaccurate it is when we try to measure how many healthcare professionals we have going in and out of the field and at different levels and who's up to date in their training? And also, part of that, of course, is the workforce assessment, you know, to get at those issues. Care coordination demonstration grants. So independence at home demonstration programs. We want to keep older adults in their homes, so care coordination is not just in the institution. It connects to the home. Home and community-based services. Now, this is what's been nixed, and that was the CLASS Act. Community Living Assistance Services and Supports was basically an attempt to have an optional health insurance program for long-term care. So needed, but never made it to the funding block. And it also would have established a personal care attendance workforce advisory council. Again, much needed. So I am done, and in conclusion, I just wanted to emphasize the broad scope that we need to pay attention to when we think about the workforce and the unbelievable complexity in how we bring that workforce not only to a level of knowledge and skills, but then we have to figure out how to get them to work together. And only in that way can we start to look at a complex issue like palliative care, hospice care, and what that really means to have a coordinated team help patients and their caregivers make decisions that they really don't want to make. It's really difficult. Thank you.